right direction. The museum said they could probably raise a little funding. I said, I've had exhibits, and as a lot of artists do, I pay for the ink and the paper, and it all comes out of my pocket. Nobody wants to give you any money. But I said, for this, if we could maybe find some organization to, donate some money. Maybe you can get something from the Wright Museum just to help me pay for the supplies. I'd be willing to print all these. So that's the Coleman
Young
story. Yeah, that's right. I have not really talked to the Charles H. Wright Museum about this yet. Mm-hmm. I have to take them a batch of first set of photographs I'm giving them are my pole town pictures I did in 1981 of the community that was demolished for the pole town plant. So I'm preparing those with captions captions and titles.
What's the timeline to get everything to the Wright Museum?
There's no timeline. It's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
Because I really do. I have a lot of stuff. And they like digital files. Mm-hmm. And so I have to scan. I have a lot of them scanned, but I have to scan them. And I do a little bit of repair because a lot of them are, my negatives from that era are, it's like they've deteriorated. Lots of spots, especially if you blow them up a little bit, spots and scratches. Yeah. And so I clean them up in Photoshop a little bit. But if I do that to everyone, it would take years. So, and they don't mind as is.
Right.
You sometimes see museum pictures, and they haven't been restored. Mm-hmm. There's scratches on them, so it's not really. And if they want to do that, they can find somebody to do that on an individual basis. I mean, why should I clean up 30 pictures when they just may sit in the digital archive for 20 years and nobody ever look at them?
Right. I think people will look at these.
These?
Yeah. Whatever you're sending over.
Oh, well, that's up to the museum. If they. So.
All right. So let's look at a few more. You loaded this drive of photos.
There's 50 pictures.
Okay.
Yeah, this is at the Niagara. This guy's name was Lawrence Godfrey. There were two guys, Lawrence Godfrey and Norman Brandenburg. Norman Brandenburg, and there's a picture of Norman coming up, lived in the basement, a basement apartment all by himself. He was in a wheelchair in the back. And he was a very sweet old guy. Very alone, and I visited him, and he was always very happy. He smiled. He was happy to see me, and I remember getting things for him at the store. I guess my little story about that is he was hard of hearing, and I wrote. You want to hear all this?
Mm-hmm.
Sandra, all right. I wrote Action Line. Remember Action Line? That was a thing in the Free Press where it was on the front page. People would write in and ask, I need help with something. Can you help me? And Action Line, there'd be somebody that would facilitate it. Like, Help Me Hank on WDIV.
I don't remember that, but I know the kind of thing that you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, it was called So I sent a picture of Norman, and I said, this guy could really use a hearing aid. He's in this apartment in the Cass Corridor. And I got a response that they had made an appointment to pick him up and take him to the Detroit Hearing and Speech Center to be fitted for, sort of naive. I think back on some of the things I did, and I kind of wonder about myself. But he was a kind of a mess. His clothes were just dirty and stained and crusty, and I didn't clean them up or anything. And I remember we got his wheelchair out, and they put him in a van and took him to Detroit Hearing and Speech Center, and we took him in and. There was a woman there, and she kind of looked at me like, geez, you could have cleaned him up a little bit or something, I think his ears were probably, I remember them, I think, just digging wax out of his ears, and And I'm just like, oh, duh. But they got a hearing aid. They made a hearing aid for him, and he was taken back to the apartment. And a little bit of time went by, and I got a notice that if the hearing aid came to me. It seemed like the hearing aid came to him, which doesn't seem right, but somehow the hearing aid, I had the hearing aid, and I went down there, and Mary told me, she said, "Bruce, Norman died. Norman and Lawrence both died." This is Lawrence. And I sort of knew both these guys. Lawrence was really out of it. Norman wasn't. But so I had the hearing aid, and he died. They found him. It's in the article that they found him on the floor next to his bed. And one of the guys speculated that he used to take aspirin, a lot of aspirin, maybe hundreds of aspirin, I don't know. And he said his ticker couldn't take it. I remember the quote. But, he died. He was just bad health anyway. So, this was Lawrence. That's the basement. Yeah, and that's Matt on the left. I don't know the woman. He's the one that... Matt's apartment was right here, and Lawrence's was down here, way at the end, on the left. And Matt was the one that told me about the tick, his ticker, he used to...
Ticker couldn't...
So those are people, that's how the basement looked, and at the top of those stairs was Mary's apartment, right at the very top on the main floor was Mary's apartment. That's Lawrence, and that's how he, as I walked in his door... That's how I often found him. He'd be pulled up to the table. He rolled his own cigarettes, and he'd have a beer. These are... this is after the Niagara was abandoned.
Wow, okay.
And I had my big camera. I went in there one day with my big camera, my big press camera, which... takes 4x5 sheet film. And it was sort of an experiment. It was a mess. The place was detritus. Is that the word? Just all this junk and stunk. And a photographer sort of wants to give order to... I mean, you can take that path. There's composition and the quality of the light. I mean, these are the things that, they talk about. And it's hard to go against that. It's like the same poles of the magnet. There's sort of but I was determined. It's just like I just set this thing up and I didn't compose. Set it up and didn't try to compose or make it, and I just photographed what was there. And I took, 15 or 20 sheet film. Mm-hmm. Just, this is the end of it. This is the end of these lives. This is what is left behind, absolute sordid chaos, mess, revolting.
Yeah. And this was what kind of camera?
This is like the old newspaper photographers used in the 40s and 50s. You see them with that big flash. It's that press camera where they had to put the film holder in and then turn and pull out the slide and take the picture and then flip the film holder around. So they call it a press camera.
And what kind of camera were the other ones taken with?
Some of those were also taken with a press camera, the 4x5. And I also used what's called a twin lens reflex. Mm-hmm. Two lenses, you look down through the top and the negative is 2.25 inches square. So it's medium format. Mm-hmm. The press camera is sort of large format. Mm-hmm. And then I used 35 millimeter also, Those negatives are an inch by an inch and a half. That's small format. Okay. So that this is my, I see myself as an early, this is my very, very early contribution to ruin porn.
A lot of photographers would not use that term about their own work, especially in Detroit.
Well,
you're kind of grinning as you're
It's been a big thing, you know, if you've heard the last couple years, this ruin porn thing of Detroit. And so I did it in 1978.
Do you feel like you're the pioneer of the ruin porn?
Well,
movement?
Who knows? I mean, artists have been photographing ruins. Right. I mean, painting ruins. You know, in the Civil War, there are pictures of Atlanta after Sherman burned it. So, you know, it's not exactly ruin porn, but I guess in a way it is.
Well,
but,
you sort of smile every time one of us says ruin porn. Why is that?
Well, it's just sort of a fun. I never really liked the term because it's legitimate photography of, you know, of a city that where a lot of things have deteriorated and been abandoned. I guess some of the ruined porn, there's that old force to sort of make it aesthetic, make it aesthetically pleasing, which is kind of a contradiction, you know. Mine, I saw as sort of real porn. It's gross, you know. I'm not trying to put a gloss on this, you know. It's just nasty stuff. And, I mean, it's, you know, I've never done anything with these pictures. I've never shown them anywhere. Because
yeah.
Who'd be interested? Nobody wants to look at that. But for me, it's an exercise in, I remember when I.
In what? An exercise?
Well, in when I had Bill Rahauser. It's a big name in photography in Detroit. And I was very close to him when I was a student. I think he liked what I was doing. Matter of fact, he advised me when I was preparing this article. I showed him my pictures. And one thing that I failed to do, I like to talk about my failures. I get a lot more satisfaction than saying the good things that I did or equal. But I never photographed the front of the Niagara apartment. I had not photographed the exterior of the Niagara apartment, and I showed these pictures to Bill Rahauser, and he said, you know, I think you should get a picture of the outside of the building. So I photographed the side of the building, the long side with all the windows, and it was used in the article. But Bill, once he talked about, and he did this for a very short time, then he decided it was sort of silly. Pictures that don't have what I was talking about. There's no conscious effort to make a good picture. And he would talk about how when you used to have a roll of film, you'd put the film in the camera, and you had to advance it three or four times before you got to frame number one. And so you would advance it, and you'd click it, and you'd advance it, and you'd click it, and you'd advance it, and click it, till you get to number one, and then all of a sudden, then it comes up to your eye, and you're like, you want to get the composition. So he had this idea that of using those first three or four pictures where there's no conscious effort to formalize it. Mm-hmm. And that fascinated me because it's a whole different idea about photography.
Mm-hmm.
But invariably Bill, you know, he kind of said, you know, it's just not, there's nothing there. And Bill, what is it Bill says? The art is in the seeing. That's sort of his line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what that means is the value of it is in these conscious, intelligent, artistic decisions to show something, which is what most of his photography is about, and it's very good. But the idea of this sort of thing, it's like, you know, there's
a bed?
It's an old bed frame and mattresses and writing on the wall and just junk that's been left behind. You know, you know art, if you know art, there's, I mean, what is it that they do? Modern art, what is it, urine, a picture of Jesus in urine or something. So it's kind of like that, this.
That was composed. This is not composed.
Well, it's not consciously composed, but it's, you know, the elements are all there. Mm-hmm. Light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, if you start digging too deep into what this is about, then you end up spinning your wheels, but
sometimes. All right, so this photo. All right, now we're switching gears a little bit.
Well, I also wandered over to Cass Avenue, which I went into the Gold Dollar Show Bar. The building is still there; it's just empty. But it was due east of the Niagara, around the old Chinatown district of the Cass corridor, and again at this time, which was 77, I discovered a book of photographs by Diane Arbus. And Diane Arbus was a New York photographer who used a twin lens reflex square format, and she photographed society's outsiders, transvestites, drag queens, other people, and with just a direct flash, not beautifully composed, not beautiful light, just really raw. And when I first saw that, it just really bowled me over. You know, it just, wow, this is, and that's a little bit like those previous pictures. You know, these aren't pretty, these aren't Ansel Adams, you know, beautiful, beautiful things. They're gritty and they're, you know. And I was very influenced, and I think that's one of the reasons why I ventured into the Gold Dollar Show Bar, because it said on the front, female impersonators. That was the painted on the front of the building. And so I did sort of the same thing there. Although,
and you had just wandered in on your own?
I went in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I probably did not have a camera the first time I did, although I may have. I may have been carrying my small camera. But somehow photographers eventually get around to taking pictures. And I think that has to do with people like to have their picture taken. It's flattering, and I think I've found that. Maybe not the Niagara, but even at the Niagara, I think people feel that someone is paying attention to me. Somebody thinks that I am worthy or important enough in some way for them to want to take a picture of me. So I think it's not like I have to convince people. Sometimes you do, to let me take pictures, especially performers. Yeah, certain amount of ego involved. And so before you know it, I was hanging out there and I was photographing in the Gold Dollar.
Go back to what you said just a second ago. When somebody is reluctant to have their photo taken, how do you, but you really, do you try to talk them into it, for lack of a more eloquent phrase, or how do you work with them if you really want that photo?
I don't press them much. I'm pretty good. I have good instincts with people. You know, in these projects, and there's another project I did later in the late 80s, which was people. Sometimes I was going to say, you get to know them, you spend time with them, and eventually they'll let you take their picture, but that's not really the case most of the time. If they don't want their picture taken, they show no interest, I usually move on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people who initially seem receptive to it. Then if the project is such that it's not just something where I photograph them once and never see them again, then I go back, and I've had relations with, become friends with people over a period of time, and I photograph them over a period mm-hmm. of time. Yeah, so... Right.
So, Gold Dollar.
Yeah, so that was a fascinating place. Again, yeah. It was a long time ago, but, you know, it was kind of a seedy place and cigarette smoke in the air, and I remember they'd go up on stage, and it was pantomime. You know, I remember Eartha Kitt, you know, the Eartha Kitt playing on the loudspeakers, and this gravelly voice and this particular... impersonator miming to this Eartha Kitt song and sort of a rowdy, bawdy audience and people sitting at the bar. Mm-hmm. Really neat, you know, neat place.
You have both the performer and the audience in this photo. Is that something you were consciously going for?
Probably in this instance. I didn't do that. This was probably, again, I didn't photograph there a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing that, you know, I mean, it's sort of silly to be self-critical, but I had a real gem in my hands at this time, but I was 25 years old, which doesn't mean anything, you know. People do amazing things when they're 25, you know, some artists. But I was a kid with a camera, and I did, you know, I'm happy with what I did, but somehow I wish I'd been a little bit more aware of what I had, and, you know, in hindsight.
How so? What do you think you were not aware of that you know?
I guess I think back now of the corridor as it was and remember so many things that I never took the chance to photograph.
Like what?
I just passed them up. Well, there was the Willis Bar. I have an exterior picture of it. I wish I'd gone in the Willis Bar and somehow, you know, I think I was a little nervous. You know, I did a lot down there, but I was also timid. The Topless Shoe Shine was right next to the Willis Bar. You know, and it's like, damn, you know, maybe I could have gotten in there. And there were stores along there, Bill's Recreation, Bill's Billiards. I think that's still open on 3rd, and I a little reluctant. You know, I would walk down the street and just some of the little cafes. The Majestic Cafe was down at the end of the corridor, and Chris and Carl's Restaurant. You know, you have these sort of nostalgic memories of these places. But I was not a driven photographer. It wasn't that. It wasn't like I knew what I was supposed to be doing, and I just did it all the time relentlessly like some photographers do. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the best. You know, they photograph all this stuff.
To take my own tangent, Cass Corridor is still a term that's used a little bit, but the whole idea of Midtown has come in. I wonder how you feel about that sort of branding of the area, not only of the corridor but surrounding.
Well, I don't. Do they still call it? I don't know if. I guess they still sort of call it the Cass Corridor. It's, you know, again, Sandra, it's changed. It's so different, mm-hmm. most of it, than when I walked, when I wandered around in the late 70s. It's mm-hmm. such a different place now, and I think that's a good. It's inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing for the city because it was there were drugs, and it was you know, bad conditions down there. I mean, like the Niagara, and it was fascinating stuff for me at the time. But it's not good, mm-hmm. you know. It's not good stuff, and it's good that it's being cleaned up, and businesses are moving in. I wish them well, but You know, it's like I think of Baron Haussmann, who in the mid 19th century he was a guy that like redid Paris. Mm-hmm. You know, the old used to be these old twisted streets, and he came in and cleared out the slums and put in the boulevards, and you know, that's great, but you know, I'd sure like to walk through the old Paris, you know, before he, and I sort of feel the same way about the corridor. It had a, there was something wonderful about it, and I'm other people think, I've talked to other, mm-hmm. and it's becoming, I guess, you know, with the new stadium gentrified, rents, I've heard people, you know, I've lived here and the rents are going up, and you know, that's the maybe the downside of it. Mm-hmm. But you know, when I was there, it was a little while after the Cass Corridor artists were there, and you know, it was the old Cass Corridor. Now it's a pretty much a new place. The old Cass Corridor is disappearing. Mm-hmm. And there was another bar. People from the Gold Dollar often went over to a place called Verdi's, which was on Sibley, just west of Woodward Avenue, between Woodward and Cass, Verdis. It's just a hole-in-the-wall cinder block place. But we'd go over there, and I photographed in there. It's right where the new stadium is. Mm-hmm. Sibley is gone. Sibley Street is gone. But that was another dive bar where I hung out for a while. Photographed in there. So, they, I mean, those the places are gone.
Yeah. All right, let's go through a few more.
Yeah, you can go. I didn't mean to take so long. That's fine. Lizette. Lizette was really my best friend over there. Mm-hmm. At the Gold Dollar. And I went to her home. These are all men. You know, just, I never quite figured out. You know, it was never quite the sexual... what's it called? Identities. It was always sort of nebulous territory for me. I mean, I always thought of these were women to me. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes I would see them as men. And I was kind of, oh, okay, well, I know that, but I'm not used to seeing you as a man. But I went to Lizette's home. She invited me, and we had dinner, and she, a man she lived with. She's Cuban. And the guy was Jorge, George. And then a number of the people at the Gold Dollar lived at, I won't be able to remember the name of it. It's apartment buildings off on like 12th Street. And I visited over there. And there's one picture in here of Ron and Art, who were a gay couple. I went to and I photographed a number of these people I met from the Gold Dollar in their apartments. But the only picture that I saved were Ron and Art in their apartment. Something Courts, it's called. It's still there. People still live there. And Lizette, I've have been in touch with Lizette.
Oh, really?
I had lost touch with her for years and years, but mm-hmm. I had a website for a while, and I had some of these Gold Dollar pictures, and somebody emailed me and said, my mother knows Lizette. They took, Lizette does, not calypso, dancing.
Wow.
And my mother took a class with her. And this was 4 or 5 years ago. I did not get in touch with Lizette, but when I had this exhibit at Affirmations, I thought how wonderful it would be if Lizette could be there. Well, so I found this woman's email. She was still logged into my email, and I kind of plied them, and she talked to her mother, and she, you know, she explained that, you know, that this never comes up about Lizette and her sex, but they gave me, you know, I sort of explained how I'd approach it, and they gave me Lizette lives, is married, and she lives up near Sheboygan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Sheboygan. It's mm-hmm. up here on Black Lake, I think it's called. So I have been in touch with, and she sent me some pictures, and she looks wonderful. A few health problems with her husband, but we've emailed, and I wrote her a few letters. But the thing at Affirmations, that it didn't work out. I mean, had she lived in the Detroit area, I may have been able to get over there for the opening.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She wasn't able to come down there.
How old is she now?
She's in her 70s, mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's in her 70s. She was not real young here. She's actually, I figured out her age, and I don't remember what it was, but she wasn't in her 20s here.
Mm-hmm.
L-I-S-E-T-T-E. Yeah.
All right.
So is that...
Is that her?
No, I think that was Jackie Jordan. You know, this place later, I never went there, but in the 90s, this reopened as a rock and roll, mm-hmm. White Stripes, I guess, mm-hmm. Rock and roll venue mm-hmm. for a few years.
Mm-hmm. That's my era here.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they, this Ralph Valdez, friend of mine from Dearborn, he was in sort of a punk rock band at the time, and I guess they played there. And he said, yeah, it looks like, you know, they had the same curtain up there and same old stage. And yeah. And now it's just an empty, it's all been painted. It's just painted brown. I took a picture of it. But, you know, all the oldest signs out front are long gone. Topless go-go girls, it said out front. And there were never any topless go-go girls in there. It was just these guys. Now, that's the only picture I have in here that was at Verdi's.
Okay.
And that was a Halloween party at Verdi's.
Uh-huh.
And that's Ron and Art.
Okay.
Art was the sort of the male performer at the Gold Dollar, but he would dress in drag once in a while. I have pictures of him. Well, it was the Halloween party at Verdi's where he had different dresses on and this great big blonde wig, you know, he looked sort of like Donald Trump. Big blonde wig, but Ron
is on the left.
He wasn't a performer. He just hung out there with Art, but that was in that apartment, which I should have made a note of, which still exists. This is a building on Selden Street. That's the Coronado apartment.
Okay.
So you're looking down to 2nd Street.
That's the
2nd? That's the 2nd, would be north and south.
Okay.
This is Selden. These are the old Jeffries projects,
oh, yeah.
which are gone now.
Yeah.
So you're looking toward Selden Standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
The restaurant would be right over here on Selden.
Yep.
And the bar, there's a sort of a well-known Jimmy John's, or not Jimmy John's, John Uncle John's. There's a bar right there on Selden.
Honest John's.
Honest John's.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm still not used to it being on Selden. I'm used to it being at Belle Isle.
Oh, is that where it was?
It was on Field, right, by Belle
Isle.
Oh,
near
Field
there.
And Jefferson.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
They moved it
yeah.
down here, I mean, years ago, but
yeah.
used to go there in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Incinerator? No. Yeah, is that the incinerator?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. It's still, whatever it is, I believe those stacks are still there.
Yeah.
I think they're on this side of Woodward.
Oh, the power plant.
Probably some sort
yeah.
of a power plant. But
so
this
where
was,
it taken?
Well, this is, you know, I would walk down 3rd Street.
Uh-huh.
And I'm one for, I did it in many projects. In Pole Town, I would go in abandoned, empty apartments and go to the roof
mm-hmm.
to get these old.